Welcome to another episode of In the Name of Service, a podcast committed to sharing the untold stories of those who selflessly serve. Each episode features an interview with men and women who have been called to a variety of service-focused roles, such as the military, law enforcement, ministry, volunteering, and more. You aren't likely to know the names of the individuals you meet here, but our hope is by the end of our time together, you'll not only know their stories, but possibly be inspired to write your own in some way. Humble in nature, but strong in character, these everyday men and women showcase what it is to truly be a servant. We're glad you're here. Now here's your host, Dr. Barb Thompson.
Welcome to another episode of In the Name of Service. I'm your host, Dr. Barb Thompson, and with me today, I have the very first firefighter on the show, and I'm so excited about that. You know, my stepdad was a firefighter, and then he had a second career in kind of teaching within the fire service industry. So it's very exciting to have Kevin Housley on the podcast today. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you. I'm honored to be the first one, but I guess you can go up from here. Yeah.
You better represent this very well.
I'll do my best.
Okay, so let's just start by, I know just a tad bit about you, but for our listeners, could you give us an introduction to who you are and, you know, just kind of a nutshell of your service thus far?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm Kevin Housley. I'm a firefighter in Northern Colorado in a city called Fort Collins. We're 60 miles north of Denver. I'm lucky to work for the department where I was born and raised in the city of Fort Collins. And so really, really cool that, you know, the engine company that I'm on right now, I remember going and doing a station tour as a little teeny kid, you know, 7 or 8 years old, and I get to work in that firehouse now, which is really, really cool. And so kind of cool to give back to the community that you grew up in. You know, I went away for school and ultimately chose to come back to Fort Collins to build a life. And I'm very fortunate that I have an amazing wife named Christy. She's a PA, internal medicine PA. So she is about a billion times smarter than I am. Not that hard, but she's hard to argue with because she's always right. And so, but really, really cool to kind of grow up in emergency services. Her and I met in EMT school. Didn't date for a long time. And then, we actually started dating like right before I got hired as a firefighter and right before she went to PA school. And we have three awesome kids, two boys and a girl, 14, 12, and 7. And so life is kind of crazy, you know, and, when you look back at everything, I've been on the job in February, it'll be 20 years that I've been online as a firefighter. And so, everybody says, you know, it happens fast. It's a blink of an eye. And you're like, whatever, old man, you know? And then now somehow I'm one of the older guys on the fire department. And so just trying to keep pushing and do it the way that I think it should be done. And just keep trying to show up to serve, you know?
Yes, definitely. That's a long time. Well, tell us about your upbringing. You mentioned you're serving in the community you were born and raised in. And you had some, sounds like, touch points with fire service from a really young age. But if you could take us back through those growing up years and tell us if there's any either relationships or experiences that you feel now as an adult helped shape you into the man that you are today.
Yeah, you know, I was really lucky with the family and home environment that I was brought up in. And I don't take that for granted by any means. Yeah. And so, you know, just the values that mom and dad instilled in us as kids, you know, really, really, I look at that every day. And we, you know, we just got to celebrate my dad's 82nd birthday. We celebrated yesterday. And so, just the way that he carries himself still, you know, and the things that he does every single day. And he was a military guy. And so, you know, growing up in that structured sort of environment, I think was a huge benefit value add, you know, as a kid, maybe especially as like a punk teenager or whatever, where you think, you know, everything is maybe not the most fun things, but just those, you know, the true value of like, hey, do what you say you're going to do, be accountable, work really, really hard, show up, you know, and then just the way that he, you know, lives his life still in that way. Yeah. And then, you know, mom was around for us as kids. And, after, you know, when I was in probably in high school, if I remember right, she went back and got her doctorate in psychology. And so watching her kind of grind through school, mm-hmm. you know, she had her master's degree, but was fortunate enough to stay home with us and kind of raise us the crazy troop there. but, you know, going back and really putting forth like, hey, this is what I want to do. And she ultimately became a doctor in school psychology. And so that was pretty informative too, you know, especially at that high school time of, man, it's busy playing sports and all that stuff. And yeah, she's home, but she's also, you know, going to school and then teaching and things like that. So that was really, really, I think just, you know, they both led from the front for sure. And just the way that they handled their business and loved their family was amazing for sure. So I think that's probably the biggest relationship. And my older brother, he's 7 years older than me. He's the middle child. And I was the surprise. And so, and then we had a special needs sister.
So.
Perfect. Two surprises or two older brothers? Yeah.
Two surprises.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's great. So, you know, being the little brother who wants to hang out with your older brother who's 7 years older, that's a pretty big gap, you know? And so also kind of learning some lessons the hard way, right? Trying to play football with him and his buddies was always a losing proposition. But I think that just those things and just being in an environment that was really loving and supportive and caring, but also had high standards, you know, really, really set the foundation for what I'm able to do today.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear about your mom. I, of course, did not know that before we started talking today. But no, you know, all the work that you've done in the field of sports psychology and how you're kind of melding together your service industry and psychological principles. So it sounds like you did get a good deal of influence from both parents. It's really neat. What'd your dad do in the military? Do you know?
So yeah, he's actually an optometrist. And so he was in the Army during the whole Vietnam stuff. And then was stationed in Germany over that time. My brother was actually born in Germany on base there. And then when he came back here, they're both from the East Coast originally. They decided to land in Colorado. And so he was in the Air National Guard through Buckley and Lowry here. And all the way up until he retired. He retired as a lieutenant colonel in the Guard and then actually went back and worked as an optometrist as well as a civilian for them. So he was, that was a huge part of us growing up, right? Whether it was like reserves or, you know, why is Pop down in Denver again or whatever, you know, but that was just a thing for us. And I come from a long military family. Both my grandfather served in World War II and did some pretty cool stuff there. You know, my grandpa Carol was in the Army and my grandpa Housley was a CB in the Navy. And so they... You know, just from that, the greatest generation there. And those guys didn't really talk about much, you know? And
No.
It was always there though. Like that was a very, very important thing for us growing up was like serve, even, you know, if it was just at the local level, but service was a huge deal for us growing up.
Yeah. Did you always know that you wanted to be a firefighter?
No, I didn't. My brother did, you know, and I think looking back on that, it's kind of funny because even still, if I hear sirens going by the house, like me and the kids run to the front and take a look. I'm like, hey, I know those guys, you know. So like as a little kid, sirens went by, we'd always sprint outside and see who know, even if it was up on the main road going by. And he always wanted to be a firefighter ever since a little kid, and I actually wanted to be a sports broadcaster all the way up until I was in college. And I took a mass comm class and I was like, nah, it was not like a communication school. I did my undergrad at University of Denver and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go in the business world and, you know, do whatever. Marketing was kind of where I landed there just cause it was being creative and like applying some creative ideas and chasing rabbits and things like that. And that was the classes that I actually kind of wanted to go to. And so I started in the business world and my brother was always encouraging me like, hey, come do a ride along with us, which means you can come, you run 911 calls, you see what it's all about. Like, I think this is something you might really like to do. And he was spot on. So the very first call that I got to go on was what we call an extrication. Somebody was trapped in a vehicle crash and they had to cut them out on the interstate. And right away I was like, that is exactly what I want to do. Super awesome. And it just kind of went from there. So I kind of found in emergency services really, really late in the game. I had already graduated college, was already working in the business space, but that once I was out in the real world, I was like, this is, I do not want to sit inside all day. I was in a job where I was working on Excel from 8 to 5 and it was awful, right? And
That's a little
so,
different.
yeah, a lot different. And so just that, that anticipation of not knowing what's coming next, but having to be prepared and being physical and having a team environment, growing up as a sports kid and getting to play on a lot of really fun teams, that was something that I was missing. And so that's really how I kind of landed in the fire service. And what a cool break that I finally found it, So the rest is kind of history on that.
Yeah, definitely. So many people, I hope, are just breathing a sigh of relief because when you say that your first ride along was an extrication, which is a pretty difficult and gruesome, could be type of event. There's some people who would say like, okay, that would be my worst day on the job. That would be the thing that would tell me I would never want to do that again. But there are a group of people, thank goodness, that have that type of desire. They don't really know what to call it. They don't know what it looks like, but they have that type of experience and they're like, yes, like everything within me is saying go towards the danger. Thank goodness. Thank goodness there's people like that, like you. So tell us about some of your most, sorry, do you have some thoughts on that?
No, yeah, I feel very,
Okay.
very blessed, for sure. And to be honest, I went and I got my EMT because EMS is about 80% of what we do in the fire service, at least at our fire department. Most fire departments are that way. And so if you don't like EMS, it's not the game for you by any means, And that EMS might just be lift assist, or it might be something like caring for a patient after you cut them out of a vehicle. And that was the first time in my entire life that I was ever stoked to go to class. And I studied when I got home. So that was kind of it where right away, I'm like, this is amazing. I got to learn more, got to learn more, got to learn more. And that was really, really eye-opening. And I would have been, I don't know, 23-ish at that point in time. And so that was kind of like, oh, this is why those nerds out there like school. It's because they found something they want to learn about,
It's so
And
true.
so,
Yes.
so yeah, just a little side note there for sure.
Yeah. Were you dissatisfied in your work? Were you looking, or was it just your brother had a sense that you might be a good
You
fit?
know, yeah, my initial job out of college, I actually started looking for a new job on my second day. Like right away, I knew that that was not it was not going to be great. So, because I had some cool opportunities in college, like with internships and stuff like that, working in athletic departments, working for a brewery here in Fort Collins. Fort Collins is kind of known for a lot of microbrews. I had a cool opportunity to work at New Belgium as an intern. New Belgium is now a massive brand, but back then it was a really small little brewery. And I got to work around people that were really stoked to go to work, even though work is sometimes hard, but they were like, hey, let's solve these challenges. We like this group of people. Like I was around really healthy cultures. And so I didn't have that in my first place. The people that I got to work with, I'm still friends with some of those folks, but overall, it was a massive company that I worked for that you absolutely would know the name of it. And I was a marketing analyst and I was just this little teeny peon and it just wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I think that right away I'm like, all right, I don't know anything, but I know I don't want to do something that I hate for the next 30 years because I worked with people that hated it and they had been there for 30 years and they literally hated every single day. And I'm like, there is no chance in hell that I'm going to do this forever, And so I think that's the big thing is like once whatever the time is, once it times out, like go do something else and crush it. Like you're not, most of us aren't necessarily tied. Yes, or we're tied to it because we have mortgage payment, we got a family to provide for and stuff like that. But you're not imprisoned in the occupation or the specific company or whatever.
Yeah, there is actually an appropriate time to let go and chase something else, even if it's scary. So you mentioned something earlier that I just want to highlight about your day-to-day work as a firefighter. 80% of that being, like a first responder, first on the scene of a crisis or an emergency. And I don't know at large what the average person's perception of a firefighter's job is, but could you take us through, just so there isn't that misconception, at least during our conversation, about what life looks like? Because a lot of people think old school, either they've seen a cartoon where firefighters are sleeping until, some kind of a weird bell rings and they all slide down, the pole and get on the truck. So
yeah,
set it straight for us.
Yeah. So at our department, we work, we call it a 48-96. So we work 2 days straight. We work for 48 hours is our shift. And we essentially live at the firehouse during that time. And then we have 96 hours off, which is 4 days. And so it comes out to a 56-hour work week is how that plays out. Typically around, our shift changes at 8 o'clock. So from 8 till usually 5 or 6, it's kind of a typical day, like a business sort of day, right? We have things that we have to get done, whether that's like pre-planning businesses, public education events, different things like that, or mandated training or company training that we're doing at our level, if we can drive it, or if we're capitalizing like on a block of time where we can do training, we try to do training at least every day. And then physical fitness is in there as well. And so you eat that up really, really fast, especially if you run, a couple 911 calls. And some of the companies that I've been on, we would average around 15 to 20 calls a day. And so it's really, really hard to get some of the logistical stuff done in some of those places. You have to be very, very disciplined and focused, good time management. But you can be interrupted at any time. And so that's kind of that day-to-day thing. And then after, 5, 6 o'clock, we're still obviously running 911 calls, but we're eating dinner as a family, because the same crew of guys and girls that I get to work with, I get to work with them every single shift that I go. And so you really, really spend a lot of time. The saying is we spend a third of our time at the firehouse. And so you know these people. You know what they're like when they're hungry and they're hangry and they're tired, right? And you know when they're going through some stuff, and you know their family and their kids, and we have them come to the firehouse and like all of that sort of stuff. So it's really an extension of the family. And that's both the positive parts of family and the dysfunction parts of family.
Of course.
We can be up all night. We could be up for that full entire 48 hours. Or we could also sleep. So we have sleeping quarters there. We have we call it the day room, so we can watch, the Broncos or something like that. College football starting back up, so we might get to watch some college football. Or that's time where you can, chase project work or chase things that you want to do personally. Which over the last 3.5 years, a lot of my time, there wasn't a lot of family time at the firehouse for me. I was in the office working on schoolwork stuff. And so, that's kind of a day-to-day life, but yeah, I can tell you in 20 years, I've never one time played cards at the firehouse. Right. And so we hear that a lot. Like, oh, you guys just sit around and play cards all day. It's like, we don't even have a deck of cards in the station, And so, and if it is, it's because some psycho wants to do the deck of cards workout with tons of burpees in it, so that's kind of a day-to-day thing. The doorbell rings and we help those people, or we go out and we train in area, or we, talk to little kids at the park or at the grocery store or whatever. So it's, you have to have a different mindset when you're at work than when you're at home. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. What has been, I was going to ask you another question, but now I'm just interested in the differential, the work mindset versus the home mindset. So yeah, tell us about that, and then I'll ask whatever I was going to ask.
Yeah, sounds good. I think that the reality is people call you for stuff that probably doesn't need to be called 911 for. And then people call you for stuff that absolutely, like, we are there. That's the whole reason we exist.
Right.
And so when you go to work, you have to be ready for both of those. And I think that the most taxing ones are the ones where, when they call 911 and it's 3 o'clock in the morning at night two, and you didn't sleep at all on night one. And maybe you've seen this person 2 or 3 times in that 48 hours and still having really good customer service and treating them with respect, of course, but also like, hey, let's try to help them solve their problem. Also not pawn it off maybe on their emergency room. But obviously they have some stuff going on, you know? And so I think that that mindset alone, right, we get to choose how we show up every day. And right. It's really easy for me to sit here on a podcast and be like, yeah, just have a positive mindset and be growth minded and all that stuff. And, you know, that's probably the hardest part is when you're in the grind and you're neck deep in the suck and, you know, you're really tired. And maybe you got stuff going on personally too, you know, and you just have to figure out how do I show up? And I think that that's where, you know, going back to like having really clearly defined core values, you know, the why, as Simon Sinek would put it, you know, that's a thing that over 20 years, that thing has gotten stronger and stronger and stronger for me as to, man, stuff hurts a little bit more now, you know, than it mm-hmm. did when I was younger. And so it's harder to get up for the fifth time at night. So why am I doing this? And then going back to, all right, these are the reasons that I'm currently in the fire service. And so I think that mindset, the sooner that you can decide, hey, I get to show up and I get to choose my mindset. It doesn't necessarily make the choice easier by any means. But it allows you to, kind of ride the roller coaster of emotion, especially as the years go by,
right.
You know, because there's certainly a bell curve that happens multiple times within a 20-year career where you're super excited about stuff. And then you're also in the trough and just grinding it out. And so that's a pretty big part of it.
Yeah. And at home.
At home, you know, the big thing for me that I'm dealing with now is like, you know, the hypervigilance stuff and then just making sure when I go home that I show up at home the way that I need to be showing up at home for as a husband and as a dad. And they don't give two craps if I was up five times last night. They want to go outside and throw the football, right? Or like go for a walk or learn how to ride your bike or those sorts of things. And that's really, really important to also have a transition period. And so, you know, I have a transition period really when I go to work. I have a routine when I put my gear on the rig. That's like that, like a routine that I actually use. Like that is my space. I'm getting ready. Like, hey, as the officer, these are the things I know we got to get done today. But here I'm making sure that all my stuff is set exactly how I want it, that I'm ready to rock and roll. Because right away, you know, we've had calls we call it shift change calls, whether that's somebody needing CPR or we get a rip and fire. And it happens right away in the madness of like one person pulling their gear and the other person putting their gear on. And so that for me is now a routine that I intentionally use to transition. And now the more that I learn about this stuff, I'm really trying to do the exact same thing when I come home. And that thing for me is on the drive home, right? I'm doing my thing. I don't talk on the phone. Like that's my time because it might be the only 15 minutes that I have quiet all day, especially when the kids were younger. Mm-hmm. And then also how do I come into the house? Right. And so, what are the routines maybe that I've built over time, right? If I come in through the garage and that's the landing zone for the school stuff, does that stress me out? Okay. Well, if that's the case, then maybe I should come in through the front door, which is typically cleaner, or there might only be like 40 pairs of shoes, not 150 right. pairs of shoes, you know? And so like those little things, I think the more that I learn about it is like, how do we create routines both at work? It's really easy for us to create routines at work because it's this box, right? It's this 48-hour box. I know the building, I know the rig, I know roughly what we're going to do in a day. Yes, there's some outlier stuff, but I also kind of know what to do for some of those things. But when you come home, it's just a completely different world. That's really, really fluid. And I think that's the part that I'm focusing really heavily on now, cause I haven't been amazing at it over time. And luckily my wife is, super, supportive. And she also says, hey man, you're being a jerk. Stop it. You know?
Yeah.
And so like, we can have those conversations or you've been a jerk for 4 months. Can you please stop? Like, enough is enough, you know? And so like, I think it's really important to have those conversations. And a lot of that built from her and I being together, before I went through Fire Academy. And then when I was brand new and having some conversations of, hey, if I ever turn into that person or that attitude or that mentality, I've told this story before of, you know, there was a specific example. I said, hey, if I ever turn into that dude and, you have full permission to punch me right in the face. And you know, it was a couple years ago, probably, I don't know, it was right before I went back to school actually. And she said, "Hey, remember that time we had a conversation and you said, if I ever turn into that dude?" And I was like, oh no, she's going to drill me right in the face. Like I knew what she was what the conversation was going to be, you know? And I told her that was okay. And she said, "I'm not going to punch you in the face, but you need to stop. Like, this is the punch in the face. Like, enough, dude. Because you are not only that person, but now you've actually made it worse." And so that was a really good wake-up call. And it's really important to have those relationships and those environments, whether it's within your family dynamic or somebody that knew you before you got into whatever industry or service industry that you were in. I think it's really important because, you know, regardless of the branch of service, fire, police, war fighting, EMS, all of that sort of stuff, like the job changes you. It absolutely changes you. And so it's really, really important to be aware of that. But you also can't just like try to hold on to who you were before it, because you do see the reality of the human experience and what humans do to one another sometimes. And so, but it's okay to feel those emotions too. You know, you can't feel them by taking it out on the Jameson bottle. You have to do some hard work. And the more time you're in the business, or the more stuff that you see, or the more things that you experience, that might, you know, help your existence, or it might kind of hurt you and change you in a negative way for sure.
Yeah. There are so many mini experiments you can do if you're aware, like you are. And, you know, I know that you're talking to the people that you work with about these same or similar topics. Then, like you just said, the difference between coming in the garage door and the front door, like that's so silly, you know, it's so tiny, but it makes a difference. And there's all these mini experiments that will build your resilience. And I think continue to keep giving you that little bit of hope that as you look at your environment, whether it be at work or at home, you do have some control over positive changes just to get things started. Go ahead.
No, I think you make a great point. Yeah. And I think it probably all comes down to control, right? And it's hard for us, anybody, to really be not in control, you know? And so I think that that's maybe a lot of it too is, you know, Christina, I had a conversation this morning in the garage. We just moved into a new house 2 months ago. And so for anybody that's ever moved in their life, they know that that is a painful experience, especially when you live in one place for 12 years and have three kids in there. So you have a lot of stuff. And yesterday was kind of one of the final days where we got stuff out of a storage unit and things like that. And the garage is a complete mess, right? And the office, because most of the stuff that was in storage belongs in the office, it's, if I showed you the rest of this is all nice and put together, but the rest of it is certainly not. And I was like, man, oh man, like when I walk in those two spaces, it's just like a stressor. So if I was coming home, if I couldn't get all that stuff done before I go back to work, I'm probably not going to come in through the garage, because that right away, I'm going to just be like, I have so much work to do. I got to put those shelves up. There's somehow we have 512 bikes. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like that stuff is kind of a stressor. So can you control maybe some of those things, to show up, whether it's going to work or whether it's coming home? I think just showing up and being where your boots are is a really, really important concept to focus on.
Definitely. Tell us about, the experience that comes up or comes to mind when thinking about your service so far. And I know there's a million, I mean, you talked about the number of, you know, just emergency calls you might get in one day, and over 20 years that adds up. But what for you stands out as being most meaningful for you so far in your time of service, whether that be a, you know, particular event or period of time?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot lately too, as I'm a lot closer to my retirement than my start date, you know?
Yeah.
I think the coolest part about it is being able to serve the community that I grew up in and I choose to live in, you know, and being able to be on an older firehouse in an older part of town, you know, next to the park where, you know, I played soccer and football. I learned how to ride my bike on down the big hill that's literally right outside the front of our firehouse. And so like, that's really, really cool. And then to provide that experience for another little kid that's at the park or rings the doorbell, you know, to say hi or check out the engine or whatever. I think that we've gotten to do some really, really cool stuff as a team of people on calls and been able to absolutely impact people's lives, which is really, really cool. But I think overall, just, you know, being able to serve the community that I grew up in and I love, and I want to live here and raise my kids here, I think that is at the pinnacle, no doubt about it.
Now you are on maybe a different, I'm having a difficult time finding the words. You're on your own unique trajectory when it comes to the way that you're thinking about your service. You chose to go back to school, and I want to hear about that. And then you have an awesome podcast where you try to disseminate all kinds of good knowledge, you know, that you have learned and that you've seen, you know, through your time in service. So what, if I can ask, what was the catalyst for like going back to school 3.5 years ago and then moving kind of towards some organizational change and, you know, just, I don't know, like psychoeducation through your podcast? What started that?
Yeah, I'll start with the school part. You know, we were teaching a humor performance class. We identified a need pretty early, way back, I don't know, I identified it right away when I was in the fire academy, and that was 2005, that we got nothing in relation to like mental skill training, or I didn't know what to call it, right? But we didn't have anything. Yeah. It was just basic skills, and there was a lot of stressors that were intentionally built into the fire academy that, like, years later when I got to go back and serve as the lead captain in that fire academy role, that I'm like, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
It's completely pointless. And just being the person that says, okay, that's enough. I understand that that's the way we've always done it, but we're not doing it that way anymore because we don't have that much time. We got to teach them everything we can teach them. There's less time for gamesmanship in our industry, at least. And so, so I think that was a thing. And, you know, there was we had a guy on our department, his name's Doug McGraw. He's since retired, but Doug grew up as a really, really high level baseball player. Played up in through the minor league organizations, I believe up at least to AAA ball with the Chicago White Sox and the Houston Astros organizations. And he was a pitcher. So right away, he's kind of a weirdo, right? The pitchers are kind of weirdos. but Doug had been working with really high level sports psychologists that entire time, you know? And so he was like, dude, why are we not training people on these things? You know, like, how do you reset your mind, you know? And Doug got to play against some really, really high level dudes, Chipper Jones, Derek Jeter, like some really high level guys. He pitched against them, and he has some hilarious stories where some of their home run balls probably still haven't landed, you know? And so, but that's really the first time I heard from him. I was like, hey, this is like a routine, you know, when you ask him, like, well, if Derek Jeter hits a home run off of you, that's in the parking lot now, how do you face the next guy? Cause he might've been the first batterer that you faced, you know? And he talked about like recentering himself, breath work, using mantras, talking to himself versus listening to himself, like all of these things that are very, very well-defined sports psychology principles.
Right.
And it's like, why aren't we teaching the dudes this, you know, online? And so that's really kind of where that started. And we got a break to teach, you know, an hour. There was a cancellation and we got to teach an hour in a pre-academy class way back in 2016. And it just kind of grew from there. And so for me, you know, just self-studying, the cool thing about, you know, the information age that we're in right now is you can find a lot of information for free, and you can talk to people like you and be like, explain this to me, you know, and kind of use your time wisely when you get these cool conversations. And the catalyst to go back to school for me was I was kind of chattering about it. My wife got tired of hearing me. She's like, just go do it, dude. If you would have done it when you first started, you'd already be done. You know, there's never a great time to do it. And so, but really it was, I started having people that had taken some of our classes in humor performance and performance psychology for emergency services say, hey, that was amazing. Can you come teach my 10-year-old kid's baseball team that? And I'm like, oh man, I don't have any formal education and I don't want to mess some kids up. You know, like I already know that people in emergency services are already messed up. So I'm not, so, you know, if I'm going to go teach a kid or work with a sports team or something like that, I should probably have some formal education. And that was really kind of that final catalyst of like, all right, I think I've self-studied for years and years and years. It's time to go and like really learn how to research, how to be a researcher. Like, what are these foundational and in psych, of course, we won't call them principles, you know, but theories that all of these things are built off of. And that was really kind of that final straw for me of how do I just take it to that next level? Because the American Fire Service completely ignores the mental performance side of this. It, within the last 5 to 7 years at the most, we're finally having a conversation about mental health. Yeah. You know, so for the first 15 years of my career, we didn't have that. And so that's great that we're finally having it, but now it's all reactionary. It's all, well, how do we deal with somebody that has PTSD or PTS, or why are people leaving the industry so fast, or all of these different things. And it's all reactionary. And for me, it's like, all right, well, how can we front load the system? How do we train them to be resilient before they need it? Because if you're in the business for more than just a couple months, you're going to see some nasty stuff. It's just the way that it is.
Right.
So can I front load you with resources? Like, how do you breathe day in and day out? How do you breathe when you're sleeping? Something super simple like that, which actually makes you tougher over the long haul. And so I try to steer clear, you know, of the mental toughness thing, because that's really where we started, was like mental toughness for the fire service. And just by having that like on an academy agenda, people were completely terrified coming in because they thought that we were going to give them the beats, you know? And so it's like, we're here to create these systems and these processes. And then let's talk about mental toughness. And when I say the word toughness, what's the conversation in your head? Like all of those different things. There's really not a lot of people in the fire service specifically doing that and talking about that. And so that's really that niche where I saw, hey, we have this massive need. I'm going to go back and I'm going to get my master's degree from a really, really good institution. And then I can come in and say, hey, I understand this isn't the way that you did it as, you know, the fire chief for however long you've been here. But it's a different business than it is then. We're way busier all the way across the country for emergency medicine, firefighting, all of that sort of stuff. Yes, we might run less fires, but stuff that's burning is different. Like we can have all those conversations because of just the resident knowledge that I've had in the fire service specifically and being a student of the fire service game. And then now trying to expand that, you know, through the formal education. And that's really where the podcast kind of came into play, is every single week at University of Denver in my master's program, I was learning stuff. I'm like, everybody needs to know this. They need to know this. Like, and how can I share that? You know? And I started trying to do maybe some blogs and I'm like, this is exhausting. I'd rather just talk about it. And so really it was a way for me to like, take the content and the stuff that I was learning. And then, you know, when you have to teach something, you learn it so much better than if you're just like, okay, yeah, I got it. But if you have to teach your buddy, you're going to really spend a lot more time. And that's how I used the podcast initially, was, hey, I'm learning these concepts. I want to actually know them. I don't want to just get a piece of paper. I don't really actually care about that. I want to learn these concepts and I want to give it back out to the people that I'm doing this whole thing for. And that's really where the podcast came from. And that's been a lot of fun. You know, it's been some work along the way, but it really makes you dive into things and prove it a little bit, and challenge maybe some things that we feel as like our cultural tenets that just aren't true anymore, or maybe weren't ever true. Yeah.
Right. What kind of response are you getting from within the career field?
Really positive. Yeah. It's been really, really cool. Cause you know, sometimes you're recording that podcast that has to drop tomorrow morning, the night before after the kids go to bed, you know, and so the positive feedback has been great. And people being like, I didn't know that was a thing. Like, thank you for putting words to that.
Right.
Has been really, really cool, along the way. And then plus you get to talk to amazing folks. Like, we got to feature you on the podcast, which is absolutely awesome. And so, like I said to you off air here, it's kind of a selfish endeavor too, right? I can reach out to Dr. Barb Thompson, who's definitely a thought leader doing some really cool stuff. and be like, I have a list of questions that I want to get answered for me personally. And yeah, I'm going to share them with everybody else. But sometimes it's a selfish endeavor, you know, getting to talk to people that are in the business, and really getting some specific things answered, which is really, really cool, really fun to do.
Yeah, I think it's amazing because you're the translator between, you know, one field and another, and it does make a difference. It makes a difference because no one is out there, I mean, aside from the weirdos like you, looking up, yeah, you know, really determined to find and learn about these psychological principles that might help, you know, people in fire service not only, you know, find resilience or maintain and obtain really high performance levels, but also like maintain their sanity, have developmental conversations, you know, with the people that are coming up behind them, you know, be able to see cultural changes within the organization and know how to deal with those. But it's also like this repository now. So you're not having to repeat yourself 1,000 times. You can say, yeah, great, you reached out because you have a question about that, and now you can listen to, you know, episode 37 where I talk all about this, that, and the other. So yeah, I don't know like where you see all of that kind of culminating into or headed in the future, but it's just really cool to see someone that has been a leader saying like, yeah, we need this too, and I'm gonna kind of be the one to have the courage to bring it in, because not all of like change is usually met with some resistance on one level or another, right? And so you've definitely had the courage to face some resistance, I know. So
yeah, you got to be a weirdo, right? If you're gonna change it, you know, you got to go first. You have to have like gasp. You have to have vulnerability and share, yes, some stuff. And you got to be willing to just start. You just got to start, you know, and then everything kind of pivots from there. And you just find the way, and what doesn't work, that's all right. Let's try something else tomorrow, you know? And so you can be frustrated about it. Like, don't get me wrong. I get really, really frustrated about stuff, and I am probably the least patient person you'll meet in your entire life. And so I want it to happen yesterday. But you just start, and it grows and it goes fast. You know, when I look back at just the teaching journey, starting in an academy, in 2016, we started with an hour, right? And now we have two full days, class. We could probably easy lobby for three or four,
amazing,
you know, and I think that we're doing some really good things. And now that one class has grown into being able to teach on a national scale, at different fire departments or different conferences across. And now we're starting to grow that. All right, how do we not just make it fire specific, you know, with me and the cadre that we have teaching that?
Yes.
Or do we pivot and do we help share more information through something like a podcast that's completely free? And most of those episodes, you know, are less than 30 minutes. And so they're digestible on the way to or from work, or over, you know, if you have a free minute on duty or whatever. That's really kind of the focus there, is how can we give you bite-sized chunks that just keep you on the path to positive change, whether it's personal or organizational.
Yeah. What do you hope, or actually, I guess this is two parts, but what changes have you seen, even if small, within the industry, even since you've started in 2016, like from other people, not from you, but what changes have you seen? Yeah, we'll start there.
Yeah, the conversation is now like a normal thing. It's not like,
yeah,
oh my gosh, why are you talking about this nonsense, right? And so I think that that's a big thing. And that really started because of that mental health, mental wellness post-incident stuff. And, you know, critical incident stress debriefing, like all that stuff has been going on ever since I got in the business. Mm-hmm. But we weren't having those conversations in the day room. We weren't having those conversations at dinner. You know, we weren't having those conversations across shift, like, hey man, are you okay? Like you haven't been yourself for a month,
right,
or a day or a week or whatever, right? Like based on those relationships that you have with people that maybe aren't on your crew, Like, is everything all right, dude? You need anything? You know, like that stuff happened just from the human side if you were good at that. But now, like, that's just a thing that happens organizationally, at least for us, which is really, really cool. So I think that that's huge, you know. And then also now starting to look at, all right, we love skills in the fire service, you know. And so, like, I need to teach you something that then you can go out and produce the exact same result and I can measure it, you know. It's like, okay, well, I can teach you how to breathe better and increase your SCBA bottle time, your cylinder time, right? So we can measure you, and then we put you through a bunch of work, and then we teach you all these cool breathing techniques, how to slow down, how to reset, how to conserve air, all that sort of stuff, how to breathe through your nose, right? And we can measure that, and it's very, very clear. Like, hey, when you came in, your initial assessment was this. After 2 days, your final assessment was 4 or 5x. It's pretty cool, you know? And so, like, I think that that's really cool. And there's some people working in there. You know, Rick George, who's retired, he was kind of the OG in this space for sure with Palm Beach County, Florida. Rick is still out there shaking the trees, being absolutely hilarious and just doing great stuff for the fire service, whether it's building resiliency before we need it or dealing with stuff after the fact. You know, and so really, really cool stuff. Dave Gillespie up in Canada is crushing it. Old Canada Dave is doing a great job. And so now it's kind of like we're, you know, all of these people, that's really, really cool, is we're all sharing information and sharing resources and the things that I'm into. You know, maybe Rick's using me to help teach some of that stuff or the things that he's into. Like, hey man, take it and run with it, because that's just not my gift, you know. And so I think that that's really, really cool as we're starting to have this. And now it's also integrated. I just got to talk to Captain Ian Bennett from Seattle Fire Department on the Firefighter Craftsmanship podcast. And we talked about how they're integrating human performance psychology into live fire acquired structure. So they get like a building that's donated or whatever, and they light it on fire and they conduct drills in there, and we train firefighters that way. They're incorporating human performance psychology into that
That's
space
great.
there, which is a brand new concept for the fire service. And so really, really cool to hear like what other thought leaders are doing so much better than I am doing, of like, oh, that's great. Like taking notes, you know, and really, really cool. So I think we're right on finally on that tipping point where it's now a thing where we're talking about human performance psychology, especially in relation to emergency response. And like, what are the realities of cognitive disconnect when we're stressed and things like that.
That's great. What are your, just curious, you don't have to have an answer for this, but you talked about some of the small goals. Like, we want people to be able to, learn fast, basically, capitalize on their own physiology, either during training or during real events, be able to bounce back, after difficulties. What in general, when you think those are big, those are big. It's big. It's important that you do your job well. It's important that you don't burn yourself down while you're doing your job. Are there any other like large changes that you believe will be kind of manifested in the career at large by adding some of these things from the get-go?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I think when we give people the skills and then provide environments and cultures that they can foster and grow them, and you have people that are educated within those skills, like much like what you're doing, you know, as an operational psychologist, I think that that needs to be the norm. There needs to be, yes, I understand the budget concern and all of that sort of stuff, but if people are truly the most valuable asset, then you need to put your money where your mouth is. You know, and so that doesn't, you know, like, it's great, cool. Hey, well, we have a peer support team. Awesome. You should, right? Well, we have a clinician. Amazing. You should. And then, well, we have a strength and conditioning coach now. So that's our entire health and wellness program. It's like, awesome. Those are all awesome stuff,
They
but you're
are,
still ignoring the mental side of the game before they need it, right? Or like, how do we set up a training to make sure that it is, delivered in a way that people are actually going to process that information, that they can expand upon that information, even when they're really stressed or they know that it's going to be a really stressful training, right? So when we say, hey, we're doing live fire training, right away people are kind of stressed. You know, is it a testing environment? Mm-hmm. Am I going to mess up? I've only been here for a month. I just got out of the academy. Like, I don't want to screw up, blah, 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 blah. Right away, right? You're already starting kind of in a losing proposition. And so I think that next phase really is having that embedded human performance psychologist, sports psychologist, operational psychologist, as a part of the entire organization, where they can help not only build the recruits up, right? Because like right now, we are teaching a 2-day recruit class and then that's it. Mm-hmm. So just because I got taught something 20 years ago doesn't mean I remember how to do it, you know?
Right.
And so, it's no different than if I never go out and I throw ladders. If I don't ever throw ladders, but I got taught it in 2005 in the fire academy, I guarantee that my ladder skills are going to be really, really bad, right?
Yep.
Like that's a skill that I got to get out and I got to pull them off the rig and throw them against buildings and learn stuff, throw them in the snow, throw them in the wind, all of those sorts of things. It's no different than if I'm doing mental skills training. And so I think that we need embedded people, and maybe they're working with multiple departments all at once, but I think that that is the next thing. And that's really what I'm passionate about, of trying to figure out how to take that to the next level and figure out how to provide that service.
That's so good, because it is unfair to say, oh yeah, there's all this great stuff out there that would make you better at your job, better at your home, not as burnout, you know, more satisfied. But you're going to have to do it. And you're already taking all those calls. You're already doing all the things. You're already training, you know? So it's good. It's good to say, here's all the information. Here's what would make us better potentially. But it's also a little bit unfair to say, and you have no more time, you have no more resources. Good luck.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right.
And really, you know, working with leadership too, of saying, hey, you know, how many more calls are we running now than when you were serving as a lion firefighter? Mm-hmm. Right? It's no matter what department they're in, they are exponentially higher than where they were. And so working with them on, okay, we have this big organizational change that needs to happen. From a human performance side of stuff, how can we work through that? And what are the barriers that we know are coming, right? Like, do we have people, are we allowing people to have feedback and have a voice organizationally, and pass things up and down the chain of command that you're actually listening to, right? And the thing that we always forget about is, are we taking care of those men and women as well at the top, right? So like, it's really easy for me to be at the bottom and throwing stones at them. But you know, so are we treating them with respect and making sure that they're okay too? Because their stress level is super high as well. They just might not be running 911 calls. Right. And so I think that, you know, organizational operational psychologist can really, really fill that gap as well to build really high performing cultures that bring people in, you know, a lot of what you talk about, bring them in, train them up really good, keep them healthy while they're here. But then also, how do we help them transition out and be healthy when they're not here, you know? And that's a really, really important part of, I think, all of this that we've had the blinders on for a really, really long time.
Well, you're not that far behind on it. And I think in big thanks to people like you. When I started at the last unit I worked at, you know, 7.5 years ago or whatnot, we had that initial thing, like you're talking about, like, let's try to spread the good news initially and get them really prepared for all the things that they're going to face and all the things that they're going to need physically, mentally, spiritually. But then there wasn't anything after that, right? And so that's what we had to do. We had to create it. So it's like, well, what's the appropriate time frame? Like every couple of years, these teams, and we would call it a reset week. And it was all the things you've already learned, plus, you know, everything that's new. And it was a dedicated time to refocus on, you know, all those mental skills, your relationships, you know, all those kind of external factors that impact your work and your team. And then we didn't have anything for people leaving either. And that was a really big gap. So we had to create that. In any case, lots of fun, lots of work for you to do.
Yeah.
But we're behind you. We're behind you. That's right. Okay. Let's say that someone's been listening and maybe, you know, they've been inspired by your story. You sound a little bit like the thoughts in their head, and they have a dream of, you know, serving their community in a way that's unique to them. But maybe they just don't know how or where to get started. What might your advice be for them?
Yeah, I think right away, just start. Just do something. You know, you don't build a snowball by having that massive base to the snowman, you know, to make a little teeny snowball, right? It's these little teeny things spread out across the yard or the whatever, and you got to pick up a chunk and you start just building that thing into whatever. And you just got to start and just realize, like, right away, it's probably going to suck. But the suck, you know, the suck for you is better than nothing.
Yes.
And so, like, yeah. It might suck, but it's better than nothing. And so, like, that really sucked. And now you just kind of suck. And you just get better and better and better until you don't suck. And I think that that's the big thing. And you just got to be, you got to have, you know, the courage to go first and to just be like, hey, here's a need that I see. And just start shaking the trees and don't get super bummed out when it doesn't work right away. Like, it's going to take a while. Whether that's right, wrong, or indifferent, it doesn't matter. It's just going to take a while. And then that way, if it doesn't take a while, you're like, boom, that was a sweet win. Mm-hmm. Heck yeah, let's keep rolling, you know? And so I think that that's the big deal. But you have a massive community behind you as well. Like, reach out right. to me. I'm happy to help however I can. I'm also happy to be like, I don't think that's a good idea, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try it, you know? But I think, you know, like, using people like you, just building that community, figuring out what resources do you have in your area. You know, there's what businesses are willing to work with you to help you out, whether it's something crazy like a float tank, right? You might have a float tank thing, or is it a physical therapist in your, or an occupational therapist that can do some functional movement screening or whatever, you know, some strength and conditioning dude, or a nutritionist, or whatever it is you're trying to get after to make people better. I guarantee, regardless of the size of town that you live in, that there will be a resource within 60 mm-hmm. miles of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you just got to start. You just got to start. And I love Seth Godin. I don't know if you're familiar with Seth. He's just a mastermind. And he talks about a concept of unlimited bowling, you know? So, like, when you go to the bowling alley and it's like free bowling night and you can just, you don't care, right? When you knock down pins or whatever, it's just like, oh, I try again here in a second. And that's like the mentality you got to start with is, well, I might have only knocked down one pin today, but tomorrow I might knock down seven, you know? And then the next day I might knock down two, but I just keep showing up and I keep showing up and I just keep pushing and just chase what excites you, I think is the biggest thing, you know, for me is
yeah.
just keep chasing and learning and growing. And at the very least, even if you don't create the massive systemic change that you're probably after, you're going to change yourself and you're going to make yourself a lot better. And all those people in your immediate circle are going to be better for it. No doubt about
it. Yes. Yes, definitely. All right. So how do people find you? How do people find the podcast or contact you?
So yeah, Firefighter Craftsmanship Podcast. We are on all major podcast platforms, trying to get a YouTube presence going too, if you want that. But I'm a one-man show, so as Dr. Thompson learned on her episode, I'm still trying to get some of those things out and about. Pretty active on Instagram as well at FF Craftsmanship, or you can hit us up at firefightercraftsmanship.com. I'm also on LinkedIn if you want to connect over there. And just because we have the word firefighter in our name doesn't mean that we're not happy and willing to help you regardless of what industry you're in. If you're a human, we got some stuff for you for sure. And that's really kind of what we're after, is just growing better humans and kind of creating a revolution with positive culture change and growing really, really happy and healthy, strong individuals that show up hard at work and they show up hard at home. And, you know, and for themselves, right? Like, we can't ignore ourselves and all of this stuff either. And so that's kind of the mission at this point.
All right. Well, thank you for your service. Thank you for your ambition and what you're going after now. And thanks for being here today.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. It's great to see you. Thanks for all the education, whether even if you weren't talking to me, right? Like, just education on other podcasts and willing to share and what you're throwing on LinkedIn, like, really, really empowering and motivating stuff. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another incredible episode of In the Name of Service. If you enjoyed today's episode, please like and subscribe. And of course, feel free to share with those you feel would like to be inspired. Have a difference maker in your life that you'd like to see featured? Reach out to Dr. Barb Thompson at inthenameofservice@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.